Okay. Recite Om three times. So take a deep inhalation. Open the eyes softly, and you always start with an invocation to Sage Patanjali. So you should be able to see on your screen the invocation to Sage Patanjali, and you can either close the eyes and listen to me, or you can read along and see if you can, if you want to chant along with me. So inhale. Yogena chittasya padena vacham malam sharirasya cha vaidyakena yopakarottam pravaram muninam patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi. So that's the invocation to Sage Patanjali. And Tanuja, do you mind reading the English translation so everyone can hear? Unmute yourself. Unmute first.
I respectfully bow down with folded hands and offer my salutations to Sage Patanjali, the highest among the Muni sages, who has presented the remedies for removing the impurities of the body through his treatise on Ayurveda, of language through his treatise on grammar, Patanjala, Mahabhashya, and the impurities of the chitta, mind-filled through his treatise on yoga, Yoga Sutras of Patanjali.
Okay. So just an observation, the word is Patanjali, not Patanjali.
Oh, sorry, Patanjali, yeah.
Yeah, it's Patanjali. But when you say his Yoga Sutra, then you say Patanjala Yoga Sutra, but Patanjali is the name.
Thank you.
Okay. So now, this is the, like I said, the invocation which recognizes the three of the greatest contributions by Patanjali. I mean, three of the most important areas are mind, body, and the speech, and he has given us something, you know, to clear up anything, you know, cleanse up all these three areas of our activity: mind, body, and speech. Okay, and Yoga Sutra, as it says, is for the mind, and for the body, he gave us the most extensive commentary on the Ayurveda. And for grammar, the most authoritative commentary on the grammar by Panini. Okay, so that's how he is recognized as the most important person in all these three areas. Okay, so now, last time I think all of you were here except Tanuja, I think.
Everyone? Yeah, except me, yeah.
Lakshmi, you were not there last time?
I was also not there. This is my first class.
Oh, Lakshmi's first class also. Okay.
All right. Yeah.
Okay. Now, do you have any background in Yoga Sutras in some little bit?
Yeah, I've been hearing from you only in the pranayama classes.
Okay, all right.
So I learned that, yeah.
Tanuja, you have other background in Yoga Sutras?
Yoga Sutras means I just read the Bhagavad Gita. I read the, we have the home study group here. Basically, we study from Archavidya Gurukulam Swami Dayanand Saraswati. His home study, we get together on Sundays. Yeah.
For the Gita, okay. All right, but not the Yoga Sutra.
No.
Okay. Very good. So, anyway, so this is the, basically it's a discussion on the understanding of the mind, which has been given to us by Patanjali. And just a very, very brief and quick overview for you who have not studied the Yoga Sutra. The Yoga Sutra is an ancient text which has 195 sutras, or 195 statements. And these are divided into four chapters, okay? So the chapters are Samadhipada, Sadhanapada, Vibhuti, and finally the Kaivalyapada. Pada is a chapter, okay? So these are the four chapters. And currently we are in this chapter, second chapter, which is called the Sadhanapada. That's the chapter we are in currently. In chapter 1, what Patanjali does is to discuss the concept of yoga, the definition of yoga, and the definition of the ultimate goal of yoga, which is samadhi, different stages of samadhi, different ways to get there. All that is covered in the chapter 1. Okay? At a high level, it's a, more philosophical discussion. And in the second chapter, and we've been going through the second chapter for several weeks now, several sessions, I mean. It's a monthly session. So in the second chapter, he starts out by a discussion of the five vrittis, etc. Let me just very quickly, since I'm on this page anyway, I'll go through the very quickly the essence of the second chapter. All right? So this won't give you any depth or anything, but I'm just going to read through very quickly. So the first sutra itself, it's defining what's called Kriya Yoga. And he says Kriya Yoga is a composite of tapas, swadhyaya, and Ishvara Pranidhana. Those are the three attributes given here. And, it defines Kriya Yoga. This is something that you want to cultivate as an activity, including tapas, which is tapasya, which is to go through austerities. Swadhyaya is a deep study of the self or deep study of the scriptures. That's swadhyaya. And Ishvara Pranidhana is surrendering to the ultimate reality, Ishvara. And then, which means when you surrender to something higher than you, that means your own ego has been subdued. So you're not really giving any importance to your own ego. Okay, at that point, when you surrender. Otherwise, you will never surrender. If your ego is very strong, you will say, who the hell are you? I'm strong, etc. So that's the concept of surrender, where you surrender to whatever happens, accepting and understanding whatever is happening to us. All right, so that's the surrender part. Okay, so these three constitute what Patanjali calls the Kriya Yoga. And once you do that, he says, the Kriya Yoga will eventually lead you to these two results. So the two results of Kriya Yoga, he defines very briefly, are, one is that it will lead you closer to Samadhi, the state of Samadhi. It doesn't get you entirely there, but he says the bhavana or the attitude of Samadhi gets into your mind. Samadhi is the ultimate state of total absorption, as we said. Okay, so when you practice Kriya Yoga, those three activities, it will get you very close to Samadhi. And also, it will diminish or minimize all the kleshas. Kleshas are all the sufferings, all the afflictions, the painful mental attitudes that we go through. Okay, so basically, Kriya Yoga is a great routine or great practice to help us cleanse the mind in terms of eliminating the kleshas, all the suffering. And also, as a result of that, we can get closer to Samadhi. That's the Kriya Yoga. And then he goes into a whole discussion on these five kleshas. All right. So what are these five kleshas? They are ignorance, egoism or just ego, then attachment or strong likes, and then detachment, which is not detachment, hatred or dislikes, strong dislikes, and then finally abhinivesha, which is the clinging to body life, the fear of death basically. So we have avidya is ignorance, and then egoism, likes, dislikes, and fear of death. Those are the five kleshas. And then he goes into a discussion of each one of them, okay? And in this sutra, all he's saying is that this avidya, which is ignorance, that's the mother of all these other kleshas that follow it, okay? So that's the main root cause, a source of all the suffering, all right? Avidya. Looks like we lost Tanu, huh? Oh, there? No? Okay. Okay. So, and these kleshas can be in the dormant state, they can be in the feeble state, etc. There are different stages or different states of these kleshas. Basically, what he's saying is kleshas can be very strong on the surface, they can be acting right now, or they can be submerged in deep inside the in the levels of subconscious. Okay, so those are the concepts that he talks about. And then he discusses the concept of avidya. What is avidya? What is ignorance? Basically, he says ignorance is not understanding the reality. It's very simple, not knowing the reality. That means what is impermanent, you think that is permanent. What is good, you think it's bad. What is bad, you think it is good. Opposite, basically. What is painful, you think it is very good for you. All right? Very simple examples, like this body is impermanent, but we think it is permanent, and we only take care of the body. That's one quick example. Other things happen, right? Dukkham, something that will eventually cause us pain, we think it's going to be very, very pleasant for us, You keep eating a piece of cake. I always give the example of a cake, right? You eat cake, and it's very pleasant for now, but eventually it's going to lead to suffering. We don't recognize that, all right? So things like that. So basically that's all avidya. Not realizing our true self, thinking of this body, mind, etc., being the true identity, true self, that's avidya. And asmita, ego, is because we are ignorant, so ego takes over, and we then forget that our true identity is our pure consciousness, and then ego takes over and it starts acting as if that were the whole master, okay? So it starts acting as the controller or the master. So the power of the seer or the purusha, it kind of gets attributed to the ego. That's the whole problem there. And then this is all about life's experiences, raga and dvesha. So basically any experience that gives us pleasure, we identify with that something as sukha. Sukha means happiness or comfort or pleasurable experience, okay? So we get attached to that, okay? Once we have a pleasurable experience, we get attached to that. And then once we have a negative experience, unpleasant experience, we withdraw ourselves from that. We want to stay away from that. We develop a dislike, a hatred for that, some unpleasant experience. So that's called dvesha, raga and dvesha. Right. Okay. So, and then abhinivesha is the fear of death or clinging to this bodily being. This whole strong desire to stay attached to this physical being. That's called abhinivesha. And there's a fear of death attached to it. Okay? All right. Okay. So now, let's move on to the... So that's pretty much all I want to talk about here, and then go on to some of the other sutras that we talked about. So this is, now it starts talking about this whole theory of karma. Karma as it applies to, reincarnation, rebirth. Okay, so the whole concept here is that because we are not aware of our true identity, so we get entangled. So the true identity is pure consciousness, the soul or the atma or the purusha, but it gets entangled with the ego and all the stuff that's going on in the mind. Okay, and because of that entanglement, we are not able to free ourselves. We are staying totally bonded with our past, and because of the bonding with the past, which is all the samskaras and all the past impressions called vasanas, because of that, there is no freedom. So when the physical body dies, physical body disappears, gets merged into the five elements, the subtle body, it still remains. And subtle body has all the other elements of the subtleness in the body, in the human being, plus it's the purusha or the atma which is entangled with it. All that becomes a part of the subtle body which gets transmigrated into the new physical being. That's the whole basic concept of reincarnation in the Yoga Sutras. All right. So because we have these kleshas, and because of that we are impelled to do actions, and every action creates an impression called a samskara, and also it creates some kind of hidden desire called a vasana. Because we have all that as a part of this whole bag, so to say, you call it the karma bag, and the term Patanjali uses is karmashaya here. Karmashaya is the bag of this entire large bag of karmas. Okay? Because of that karma, or because of that bag that we carry, we are going to go through a sequence of rebirths. Okay? We'll have a birth, we live through life, then die, and then go back into a new situation. Okay, so that's what it is saying, that you will be experiencing life over and over again. And whatever you do now, its outcome, its result, okay, will come either in this life or even in a future life. That's exactly the whole point he's making here. Okay, so that's the whole concept of this. Drishta, drishta, janma, vedaniya. Vedaniya means experience. Okay? And how do you experience it? So these are the three elements, jati, ayu, and bhoga. So you will either experience it, in all these three basically. Jati means some kind of a species. Some people say it will be something like you will be reborn as a human being or in some other species like an animal or insect or bird or... It doesn't matter, So that's kind of jati. Ayu means what kind of lifespan you'll have, whether you'll have a long lifespan or a short lifespan. And during that lifespan, what kind of experiences you will have. Bhoga. Okay, so bhoga is experiences. So those are the three attributes of what happens as a result of your actions that you're doing, or what, as a result of your bag of karmas. Okay? All right, and all this happens because you've either done good deeds or bad deeds. It's a very simplistic statement here. All right, if you do good deeds, you'll probably have good experiences in future. If you do bad deeds, you'll have bad experiences. Punya is good deeds, apunya is bad deeds. Okay, those are the words that Patanjali uses here. A very simplistic understanding of the theory of karma. Okay, and then. But what he's saying here is, this is a very important statement that he makes, that for somebody who has realize himself, who has attained this title of Viveki. Viveki is the word used for a person who can discriminate between right and wrong, who can discriminate between good and bad. Okay? Hold on a second. There are a couple of other people who want to join. Let me just stop this so I can get them in. Send them. Hold on a second. Give me a moment. I just saw two people more signed up. One second. Okay. I'm not sure if they'll join now. I saw two more signups. Okay, so let me go back to that screen. Okay. All right, so that's the concept of klesha and how we go into this whole sequence of life, death, and rebirth. But then what he's saying here is that for a person who has attained a sense of wisdom, a sense of discriminatory wisdom, he knows that everything is painful eventually. In the final analysis, no matter what experience you have, if it's a pleasant experience, it's very short-lived. Eventually, everything becomes painful in this life. As long as you are in this cycle of birth and rebirth and death, nothing is pleasant eventually. It's very similar to the Buddhist philosophy where they say dukkham. You know, they also say the same word, that everything is full of dukkham. The whole world is just pure suffering, basically. That's what Buddhists say, right? But then there's an end to that. But through this whole realization of self-realization, you can eventually get rid of this whole cycle of birth and rebirth, etc. Okay? So this happens because of the... Basically what he's saying is that because we are constantly controlled by the three gunas. Okay, does everyone know what the three gunas are? The three gunas. You're familiar with that, Tanu? You're familiar with that?
Yes, but I don't know much.
Okay. All right. So we're going to differentiate between you two, Tanu and Tanuja. Okay. All right. And I'm assuming, Tanuja, you are very familiar with that from the Gita study, the three gunas? Yes. Okay.
There's a lot of disturbance. I muted myself.
That's okay. Don't worry. That's fine. Yeah. All right. So this sutra, what it's saying is that because of this constant churn that these three gunas go through all the time, you know, nothing remains same. Everything is changing constantly, and therefore, even though it might be something might be very pleasurable right now, but it's not going to remain the same. It's going to change into pain or suffering at some point in time. Okay, so these are the kind of the things that he is talking about when he says that everything, for a person who has attained wisdom, he knows that everything is painful, and you have to get out of that whole mess, basically. That's what you're saying. Okay? And this one is, all it's saying is that there is suffering, we know that. Okay, and what we have suffered in the past, you can do nothing about it. And what you're going through now, maybe you can do something, but maybe not enough. It's a part of your prarabdha anyway. But suffering that has not yet happened, we can avoid that. That's a very important statement, that suffering that has not yet happened, we can prevent that. We can, and it should be prevented if you want to live a peaceful life, basically, you know. So that's the statement, heyam dukkham anagatam, all right. And why do we have that? First of all, you know, why do we have the suffering anyway? Because it says that because the lack of understanding, okay, so we kind of feel that oneness between the Purusha and the Prakriti, between the Atma and the Buddhi, between the Atma and the ego, we have that superimposition. We do not know the separation between the two, but we have that superimposition. And because of that, okay, this suffering happens. But this suffering is preventable, avoidable, all right? So what he's saying is, the suffering which is preventable, heya hetu means something that is preventable, something that is avoidable, and that suffering is caused by the union. Sanyoga means the union. Union between this Purusha, between this Atma, between this soul, and what we consider as the ego and the Buddhi, or this human complex, all right? That's basically material complex, all right? So that's how we finished last class. I think last session we finished up to here, right? Does anybody remember? I think that's what we completed last time.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. So now we're going to move on to the next sutra. So remember what we said was that the suffering is caused by the apparent union between the Purusha or the Atma or the soul and Prakriti. So the words, Patanjali, you have to become very familiar with these words, okay? Patanjali uses the word drashta. Drashta means the seer or the observer for Purusha or for the Atma, for the soul. And uses the word drishya. Drishya means something that is seen. And what is he seeing? The whole Prakriti. Prakriti is this entire complex of mind, body, intellect, and all the senses and, you know, elements and all that. So that's the whole complex there. So that's Prakriti. So he's using different terminology for these elements. All right? So their apparent union, their misidentification with one another is the cause of this suffering that eventually needs to be avoided. That's this sutra, all right? Now, let's move on to this sutra, which is defining or explaining what is this prakriti, what is the drishya, what is that to be seen, or what is it that's being observed. So the imagery here is that there is Purusha on one side. Purusha is this whole spiritual consciousness. Again, the words commonly used are ego. The Atma or the soul. You know, that's common in the common language. Atma, soul, self, capital S. That's this Purusha, and that is supposed to be purely as an observer, just observing and looking at things that are happening, not getting engaged. But because of this ignorance, it is actually getting entangled in a sense. It's being superimposed on this whole complex of material being, which is the mind, body, and the ego, etc. All right? And therefore this is happening, right? But now he says, how do we understand this whole complex of drishyam? Drishyam is what's being seen, what's being observed by the Purusha. So these are the characteristics of the drishyam that he's talking about here. Okay? So let me read the words one by one. Okay? So the words are prakash, kriya, sthiti shilam. And then the next word is bhuta indriyatmakam. And bhoga apavargartham drishyam. Those are the the kind of the, if you break these words into individual words, all right, prakasha, kriya, sthiti, okay, and then bhuta indriyatmakam, two attributes separately, and then the purpose is bhoga and apavarga. All right, so what does it all mean? So he says this scene or this what is being observed or what is being experienced, which is this whole material being composed of our mind, body, intellect, all the indriyas and all that, what is it? How do you define that? So first thing is that it is a composite of these three gunas. Gunas are sattva, rajas and tamas. Okay. The words he uses are not exactly that, but he uses the word prakasha. Prakasha is used for sattva. Okay. Then kriya is used for rajas. And sthiti is used for tamas. Alright. So you have to understand these terms in that light. Okay. Prakasha is for sattva, kriya is for rajas, and sthiti is for tamas. So these are the three gunas. Okay. So shila means composed of. So first attribute is that this prakriti, which this drishyam, this scene, is a composite of these three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. That's number one. Okay. Number two is that it is also a composite of bhuta and indriyas. Bhuta is the elements and indriya is the sense organs, basically. Alright? And we'll come to the explanation of all these terms in my next slide. Okay, but just understand this. Alright? So first is that it is a composite of these three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas. That's number one. And second is that it's a composite of bhutas and indriyas. Bhutas are the five elements plus other elements. We'll talk about that. And indriyas are all these sense organs. All right? So that's the composition of this whole prakriti. What's the purpose? Purpose is twofold. So he uses the word bhoga and apavarga. So bhoga... Bhoga and apavarga. Alright. So that is the purpose. Now what do they mean? What does bhoga mean and what does apavarga mean? The word bhoga means experience basically. Like I said, you know, in the beginning, in the earlier part, it says bhoga means all the experiences. If you have done good deeds, you'll have pleasant experiences. If you've done bad deeds, you'll have unpleasant experiences. You know? So that's the purpose of this word bhoga. Bhoga means you are presenting a sense of all these experiences to Purusha. Okay, Purusha is just the observer, but it needs to know what's, it just wants to be happy and then see what's going on. So bhoga, that's number one. What's apavarga? Apavarga is the final liberation, basically. Apavarga means liberation, final freedom. So the whole idea of this drishya or this prakriti or this what's being seen, the purpose is twofold. Firstly, it's experiencing everything in life, right, through the five senses, and it can pull stuff from the memory, brings up an experience. Okay, you taste something, you smell something, you touch something, it's an experience. Think of something, you know, that happened a long time ago. And you either become miserable, become angry or agitated, something that happened a long time ago, that's an experience, okay? All that is being presented to Purusha, but at the same time, its purpose is eventually to cleanse itself of all the impurities and finally recognize that this prakriti is separate from Purusha. It's not identified. The Purusha is not identified with the prakriti. That's the main purpose of the whole concept of yoga. Apavarga. Alright? So, prakasha kriya sthiti shilam, that means composed of sattva, rajas and tamas. bhutendriyatmak, of the nature of bhuta or the elements, and indriyas or the sense organs, and the purpose, artha. Artha means the purpose. The purpose is twofold. Bhoga is to provide experience, and apavarga is to provide final liberation. That's the drishyam. Drishyam means the seen or the prakriti. That's the definition of drishyam here. That's the sense of this sutra. All right. So let's read my notes now. I always mention, you know, these notes, I kind of read a few of the commentaries and then I kind of put these notes together. Okay. So, because sutras themselves are so cryptic, so brief, that it's impossible to understand the sutras. You know, just by reading the sutras, you cannot understand them. So you have to read commentaries to make sense out of these sutras. And not just one commentary, you have to read multiple commentaries, because even these commentators sometimes are very confused. They don't know what they're saying. So, you know, you have to make sense of make your own kind of sense after reading a few of these commentaries. All right. So these are the notes that I have. So everything in prakriti is prakriti is the scene. The word used is drishya. Drishya is seen, something that is observed. Okay, something that is perceived is a composite of three gunas. We already said that, sattva, rajas and tamas. And these gunas are constantly in flux, always. They are constantly changing. At one moment, sattva may be dominant. At the next moment, rajas may be dominant. And things can happen, right? You know, you are constantly, right now, let's say sattva is very dominant, you are focusing on what's going on here, you are trying to understand these concepts, your mind is very clean and pure, and suddenly Meera starts crying and Tanu runs after her, you know, and then that's rajas, alright? And then who knows what happens after that, right? So these things can change suddenly, alright? And all of a sudden, your mood can change, your thinking can change, depending on which guna is dominant at that moment. Alright? And these are constant in flux. That's what causes us to do all the actions, all the activities, because these gunas have a direct impact on our understanding or misunderstanding of the things in life. And they change the entire mindset in our mind. You know, Tanuja mentioned Bhagavad Gita. You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, toward the end of Bhagavad Gita, chapters, you know, I would say 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 and all that, you know, they have a very detailed discussion on these concepts of gunas. Okay, so if you really want to get into deeper understanding the gunas, you have to go back to the Gita and then study those concepts there. Because then it talks about, you know, the gunas as they relate to the mind, as they relate to your behavior, as they relate to everything basically, food, you know, charity, and it goes into many, many, many different aspects of these gunas and how they are defined and how they change our behavior pattern. So Gita is a good resource to understand the concepts of the gunas, all right? So a very quick note here, what is sattva? Sattva, you know, written is illumination. That's what prakasha means. Prakasha, the word Patanjali uses is prakasha, remember? He uses the word prakasha for sattva. It's illumination. Prakasha is light. Okay? Illumination. Light of wisdom, basically. Okay? Not just any light, it's light of wisdom. Knowledge. Knowledge, again, not bookish knowledge. It's the pure inner knowledge. Knowledge that comes from cleansing the mind. Okay? Awareness. You're totally aware of things, alright? Not just unawares of everything, right? So this full awareness. It's pleasantness also. Pleasantness, lightness. It's not, the mind is not heavy at that point when it is controlled by sattva. It's light, it's free. You know, it's more clean, it's more pure. It has a sense of pleasantness. Okay? So that's sattva. Rajas is mostly associated with activity, you know, gung-ho. You know, oh, I want to achieve this goal. I want to become the CEO of this company, or I want to gain $1 million, etc., etc. Those are the attributes of rajas, gung-ho. And then there is a lot of, in rajas there is ambition, there is a lot of greed, you know, all those things also can fall under the combination of rajas and tamas. And this is, you know, like I say, gung-ho, type A personality, as they call it. So that's rajas, activity, motion, and all this brings painfulness also, it's mental suffering, and then ambition, like I said, you know. Tamas is dullness. Tamas is inertia, dullness, feeling of heaviness. You know, when you are in the control of tamas, you will say, "Oh, my brain is fried. I can't think straight. You know, I'm done for the day. All I want is a glass of beer and a bag full of potato chips, and I just want to watch some football and do nothing else." You know, that's tamas basically. When you have absolutely no desire, no inclination, no energy to do anything which is meaningful. Okay, that's what brings us sleep also. Now, having said all that, you know, in our life, we need all these three to work and to function. So even though we want a dominance of sattva, all right, so even though we want a dominance of sattva, because once the sattva is dominant, then it can start cleansing the mind. It can start purifying the mind, okay? So we do want dominance of sattva, but at the same time, you know, we cannot eliminate all the other two. We need them. I need my rajas to be able to go to work, to be able to do things in life, you know, go shopping or to design or to plan my design at work. All that is needed. I need tamas also. Without tamas, I can't sleep. I will have no rest in the life. All right? So, did somebody else join recently?
Looks like Kathy's joining.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, she's trying to connect to audio, it says. All right. So, what I was saying is, you know, we need all these three in life. All we want to do is to somehow slowly make the sattva a little more dominant compared to the other two. Okay? They're all needed. Otherwise, nothing will function. All right? So, that's the kind of a very nutshell understanding of these three gunas. All right. Then, now it also said that this prakriti is a composite of these elements and indriyas. So, what are these? The bhutas or the elements are, first of all, there are five gross elements. Okay. So, what are these gross elements? Anybody want to mention those five gross elements?
Yeah, it's the Earth, water, fire, air and
sky and air. Yeah.
Air and space. Okay, so those are the five gross elements, and then there are five subtle elements. So each of these gross elements is identified with one of the five subtle elements. So, for example, earth. Earth is identified with what sense? Earth, which sense it's identified with?
Feeling.
What's that?
Feeling.
No, earth is what? Which sense?
Smell.
What did he say?
Smell.
Yes, sense of smell. Very good. Earth, water. What's the element water associated with?
Taste.
Okay. Fire?
Warm.
fire?
Form.
Form?
The rupa, basically, right?
Sight.
Sight, yeah.
Okay.
And air?
Air, we can just feel it.
Which touch, okay, and
touch, yeah.
And then ether or space?
Sound.
Very good. Excellent. So these are the five elements, 10 elements, you can call them, five gross elements and five at the subtler level. Each is identified with the other, all right? Okay. And then we go to the, so this is what the sutra said, right? It's of the nature of these bhutas and indriyas, right? Bhutas are these five gross elements and five subtle elements. That's the elements part. Then what are the indriyas or the senses? Again, at the gross level, we have these 11, senses, so to say. They're all considered at the gross level. All right, what are the 11 senses at the gross level? So, five organs of action. Does anybody know what these five organs of action are? Five organs of action. They are called karma indriya in Sanskrit. Karma indriya.
Eyes, nose, tongue.
No. Organs of action. Those are organs of... What you are talking about is the organs of perception.
Okay.
The legs, hands, mouth, organs of elimination, and organs of reproduction.
That's right. So these are the five organs of action. They are called karma indriyas. Okay. And then there are the five organs of perception. They are called the cognitive indriyas. And those are the five that you just started mentioning. What are these?
Eyes, nose,
uh-huh.
Tongue.
Uh-huh.
Skin. And here.
Okay. Alright, so you know what, basically you know what it means, right? Okay, looks like Kathy is not able to connect to audio. It still says connecting to audio. I don't know. Okay, so, and then of course, the other element that works with all these 10, five organs of action and five perceptions is the mind. It's the mind which either receives the information that's coming from the five senses, or it's activating all these five organs of action. So, it's the mind which is going to tell the hand, okay, go pick up this pencil. It's mind that's going to say, okay, push this guy. Or kick this guy, all right? So those are the things that are controlled by the mind. And so mind is a part of that whole concept of the 11 senses, they are saying, okay? 11 sense organs. And then at the subtle level, at the subtle level, even though they are not generally considered as the organs, but you can think of buddhi and the ahankara at a very subtle level, they are also part of the indriyas or the senses, because they work in conjunction with these gross and subtle elements to make sense out of things, okay? It's the buddhi which is going to make a determination, and the ego is what's going to mess us up, basically. All right? So that's the elements and the elements and the senses. And tamas... Again, this is all some of the commentators which are telling us that tamas is the gross and subtle elements, the bhutas. Rajas is the 10 gross senses, the indriyas. And then sattva is the subtle senses, ego, intellect and the mind. That's how they are identified. All right? And what is the purpose of Prakriti? We said the purpose is twofold. The first one is to provide bhoga. Bhoga is experience. What kind of experience? Everything. Whether we experience it through the five senses, whether we experience it through mind, through memory, anything. All that is experience. And these, every experience gets labeled by us. Who labels it? The ego. The ego labels every experience as pleasant, unpleasant, good, bad, ugly, handsome. You know, these labels are all over the place in our experience memory bank. All right, every experience that we have had in the past is labeled something like that. Okay, by the ego. Now, so that's the purpose of this whole prakriti, is to provide experiences. And provide means that they are going to have the experiences, come to buddhi, etc., and they are eventually kind of shown to the master, so to say, you know, which is the purusha or the soul or the atma. And but finally, it is the responsibility of this buddhi, etc., of the ego, to eventually come out of this mess, to come out of this whole superimposition by the ego, you know, and the purusha, start cleansing itself out, purifying itself out, so that eventually you can get rid of the influence from the ego and see your true self as a pure light, as a pure intuition, as a pure wisdom. Once that happens, then you recognize that purusha and prakriti are separate. They are not merged together. They are not superimposed upon one another. And that is the whole purpose of this, the practice of yoga, basically. Okay? So, what is bhoga? It's partaking of experiences, especially as a result of one's karma. And they can be either painful or pleasurable. What's apavarga? Is freedom from this whole cycle of birth and rebirth and death, etc. How do we get there? By beginning to understand the distinction between purusha and prakriti. Distinction being that they are two separate entities, they are close to each other, and yet they are not superimposed upon each other. Okay? So, and they are all activities of the buddhi, basically. Okay, they are all activities of buddhi, but they are being attributed to the purusha. That's because of our ignorance. You know, we are attributing these to purusha. All right, so that's the story of prakriti, or the seen, drishya. Drishyam is the seen. Okay. Now, let me see. Did Kathy join?
Yes.
Okay. Can we see your video briefly?
Okay, but you know, I'm just coming on. Did I miss the time? Was it not Central Time?
No, I suspected that. You know, I was telling somebody else also that I should have mentioned that I am on the East Coast time. Sorry about that.
Okay. Well, I'll get next time. Okay. Well, I opened my camera, but I don't know why you can't see me still. But that's okay. As long as I see you, we're good. And thank you very much for offering this to us.
It's my pleasure. Okay. And you said you are in San Antonio, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Wonderful. Wonderful. Excellent. But I still don't see you. I don't know why.
That's okay. I'm here.
No, it's okay for you, but we would like to see you.
Okay. Oh, thank you.
All right. So Kathy, you are, I'm assuming you're somewhat familiar with the Yoga Sutras?
Yes, sir. I've been teaching yoga for 20 years.
Oh, wonderful. And
you know, as we all know, the more we know, we don't know. I'm the student, and I love to be the student.
We all are. That's wonderful.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. But in terms of the Yoga Sutras, you had some exposure to this Yoga Sutras?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So right now, you know, I was telling others that we are in the midst of the chapter number 2, which is very dense in terms of the philosophy of Sankhya, which is all about purusha and prakriti and how, you know, they are related, interrelated, how they should be or should not be, etc. So that's where we are right now.
Okay.
So So just to quickly go back to number 18, what we said was that this prakriti, which is the seeing, as it's mentioned here, is of the. There are two things which it is the nature of. One is it's the nature of the three gunas, which is sattva, rajas, and tamas. And then it is also a composite of bhutas and indriyas. Bhutas are the elements. Indriyas are the sense organs. Okay, and we listed all those in the next slide here. All these elements and the indriyas, senses. All right. So that's what the composite of this prakriti is. Now, how are these gunas related to all this? This whole thing, whole concept of prakriti. So we have to go back to this entire concept of evolution. Okay? The only way to understand this sutra is to go back and understand the concept of evolution as defined by the Sankhya philosophy. Okay. Now, in the past we have kind of basically covered the basic elements of Sankhya, and I'm going to do that right now again. But it is important to understand this concept of evolution to understand this sutra, all right? But let me read the sutra first. So the words are vishesha, avishesha, lingamatra, and alingani. So these four statements are vishesha, avishesha, lingamatra, alingani. And the final word is gunaparvani, all right? What it means is that these gunas or these the combination of these gunas, guna parva means a combination or a group. So these gunas, they go through these four attributes. And these four attributes we will be defining in the next slide in terms of their English meaning. Okay, so vishesha, avishesha, lingamatra, and alinga. All right. And before we go into that, I have to go through this slide which tells us how to look at this whole evolution of prakriti, all right? So now, remember we already kind of listed these in the past, but these are the steps that the evolution went through in the beginning of this whole creation. You know, remember, you know, we are a composite of all these 23 elements, all right? They are called the evolutes of prakriti. That's what we are a composite of, okay? Now, remember, at the broad level, there are two entities, right? Purusha and Prakriti, right? In the unmanifest state, what does that mean when I say unmanifest? That means nothing has happened after that, right? It's unmanifest, okay? In the unmanifest state, there's no creation, but it's called unmanifest because at that point, the three gunas, the sattva, rajas, and tamas, are in a state of perfect balance. Okay, now, you have to understand this. The Sankhya philosophy says perfect balance. Does it define what perfect balance is? It doesn't. It doesn't tell you what that means. Okay? Some state where nothing is moving, nothing is changing. So there's sattva, rajas, and tamas. They're in balance and not moving, not changing any dominance. Okay, that's the state called perfect balance. All right. In the beginning, before the creation happened, that's the state of prakriti. Perfect balance of the gunas. Nothing is moving, nothing is happening. That state is called mula prakriti in Sanskrit. Mula. Mula means the root or the base prakriti or the unmanifest prakriti. Mula means it's the root and yet nothing has sprung out of that. Alright? You can call it the seed or something. Alright? Mula prakriti. It's also called pradhana sometimes. Alright? In some contexts it's called pradhana. Now, how does creation happen? So what Sankhya says, and again there is no explanation. They don't give any explanation. They just tell you this is what happens. What it says that at some point in time, because of the proximity between Purusha and Prakriti, they are close to each other, and because of that proximity, there is a sudden dominance of rajas created somehow. Again, no explanation given. Rajas becomes dominance. What's the property of rajas? Activity, action, creation, movement, all that stuff happens, all right? So we need rajas to start this ball rolling, basically. Okay? So what does it do? It starts creating these evolutes, they are called, the evolution begins to happen. And this is the way it is presented. Again, there is no explanation given in Sankhya philosophy. People just have to guess what that means, all right? So first is, if you can look at here, this it says the unmanifest or the primordial matter or prakriti. There's Purusha is consciousness here on the side. Okay, this is not getting involved with anything, but its presence is required to do all this creation. So the first thing that is created is buddhi or the intellect. It's also called mahat. Okay, intelligence, discriminatory wisdom, you can call it. It's intellect. Okay, buddhi. From buddhi comes ahankara. Ahankara is the ego, or something that allows us to have an identity for myself. That's what determines, eventually, the ego determines who I am, what my identity is. Am I a student? Am I a teacher? Am I a mother, a father, a son or a daughter, a worker, a co-worker, or the president, or whatever. That's the identity that is given to us by the ego. And that's created from the buddhi. And from there, it branches into two different branches, it says. And one is the sattvic branch, the other is the tamasic branch here. So this is tamas, dominated by tamas, and this is dominated by sattva. So, but everything is activated by rajas. These movements or these creations or these evolutions happen only because rajas is active. We need that. Otherwise, nothing will move. All right. So you can see rajas is impelling both the branches of this evolution. Now, the sattva creates the mind, and also it creates the. This is a kind of a misnomer. This is not true. Gives the impression that mind is creating these five cognitive senses and five active instruments. That's not true. Ahankara creates all these 11: mind, the five cognitive senses, as well as the five active instruments. So this chart is a little bit misleading. So please move this mind to the side, because ahankara creates all these 11. Mind is not a creator. It's kind of a misnomer here. All right, so it creates mind, and then we talked about these five cognitive senses called the jnanendriya, hearing, touch, seeing, taste, and smell, and then the five active instruments, or the karmendriya, the indriyas or the organs of speech, organs of hands, feet, then procreation and elimination. Remember these, we just talked about those. Okay, so that's the branch that is dominated by sattva. And then the tamas or the tamasic branch, from that comes the five subtle elements, first of all, which is the tanmatras. What are the five subtle elements? Anybody remember five tanmatras?
Earth, water, fire, air, space.
No. Again, you got those are gross elements. We are calling subtle elements.
Sense of smell, touch, taste.
Yes. Okay. Very good. Yeah. Five senses. Five senses of smell, touch, taste, touch, and all
touch
that.
And sound.
Yeah. Sound, etc. So those are the five.
Mm-hmm. So they're called the subtle elements and the cognitive senses?
No. Cognitive senses are the sense of, the cognitive senses are actually the instruments, the ear, mouth.
The ability to do those,
yes,
things, to hear and to see.
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
The ability to do that. And then what we sense is these senses of smell, touch, and all that. Now, each one of these gives rise to these five gross elements. So the five subtle elements, tanmatras, give rise to the five bhutas, or the five gross elements. So, for example, the sense of, like we said, the sense of smell will give rise to earth. Sense of water, sense of taste, gives rise to water, etc., etc. So they go in that order, all right? So this is how we come to an understanding of this whole evolution, which happens starting from the proximity of Purusha and Prakriti. In the beginning, Prakriti is totally in a state of balance, which is called Mula Prakriti. And like I said, the other name given in some texts is Pradhana, P-R-A-D-H-A-N-A, Pradhana. That's also another name for this Mula Prakriti, which is the root Prakriti or the unmanifest Prakriti. And then, because of the sudden dominance of Rajas at some point in time, this evolution begins to happen. Okay? And the evolution starts by the first thing that's created is the buddhi, intellect, then ahamkara, that's the ego. And from there are two branches, sattva and tamas. They are both impelled by rajas. And the sattva branch gives us the five cognitive senses, the instruments of action or the karma indriyas, okay, and the mind. Those are the 11 indriyas, they are called, given by the sattva. And from the tamas or leg, we get to the five subtle elements and the five gross elements. All right?
Yes.
This is the whole concept of the evolution of this whole concept of Prakriti. All right? So what did we say here? So we have to understand these terms now. What is Vishesha? What is avishesha, what is linga matra, and what is alinga, all right? These English meanings are specific, non-specific, they mean nothing, because they don't give you any idea whatsoever, okay? So don't worry about that. We'll have to understand these terms as they relate to these elements of evolution, all right? So we'll talk about that now, okay? So how is the evolution happening? So what it's saying is, that the evolution starts at the very subtlest of levels. Subtle means sukshma, or it's the subtlest level is the Prakriti, Mula Prakriti, very subtle. From there, you go into... What's that? Oh, Kathy, you need to mute yourself then.
Okay, sorry about that.
All right. So, at the very gross level, at the grossest level is the five elements, right? Earth, water, fire, air, and ether. They are considered to be at the grossest level, right? And as you move up higher and higher, okay? Oh, there you go. We finally see Kathy. Okay. Okay, wonderful. All right. Okay. So,
Subhashji, one question. What is the Linga Matra and the Alinga Matra, I forgot?
You haven't forgotten. We haven't told it yet.
Okay.
We haven't talked about that. That's what we're coming to. All right. So, the evolution at the grossest level are these five gross elements, and they go into subtler levels, you know. So, the subtlest was the Mula Prakriti, next level was the Buddhi, next grosser level, okay, is the ego, and then the five sense perceptions, five sense organs, etc. And finally, at the very grossest level are the five gross elements. And even among those, you know, there's a gradation, okay? It starts at the ether, then air, okay? Let's go the other way. The grossest of these five is earth, okay? Then a little bit subtler but still gross is the water, then fire, then air, then ether. So among these five also there is gradation. Ether is part of the gross elements, but it is subtlest among these five gross elements, okay? That's how they define these. So they go into that in that order. Subtle to grosser to grossest. All right, Now, what is Vishesha, Avishesha, Lingamatra, and Alinga? Though that's the very, very critical part of this whole sutra. Okay. Vishesha are those elements. So let's step back. See, anything. So one of the. Okay, let me step back now. In Sankhya, there's a very strong concept. Okay. The Sanskrit name for that concept is Satkaryavada. Anybody heard that term? Satkaryavada? Going back to the Sankhya philosophy now. Nobody heard that term, right?
Satkarya means like good work.
No, no,
like
but
what are the good work we do?
No, no, no. Satkaryavada, it's a concept.
Uh-huh.
Okay, karya means the action or a result, okay? So, what that says, that concept of Satkaryavada says that every effect is inherent in its cause. Okay, every effect is already present in the cause. A quick example, a tree is already inherent in its cause, which is the seed. Does that make sense? A tree is already inherent in the cause in the seed. Okay. Yogurt or butter is already inherent in the milk from which it came out. All you have to do is some modification and you will get yogurt or butter or something else. Get that? So that's the concept of Satkaryavada, which is a very fundamental guiding principle in this whole Sankhya philosophy. It's very different from some of the other philosophies, all right? We're not going to go into that, but in Sankhya, you have to understand that. That Satkaryavada is a very strong concept there. And how does it apply to this evolution that we just did? Remember, in the unmanifest state, nothing was apparent. In the unmanifest prakriti state, mula prakriti state. But what it says is the effect or the outcome, or the growth from there that happened, which is the intellect, was already inherent in the mula prakriti. Same thing as it goes from intellect to the ahankara. Ahankara was already present in the intellect. It had to do some kind of a trigger, which will eventually move it down to the ahankara. Same thing. Ahankara gave rise to these five organs and the five sense perceptions, tanmatras, they are all inherent in ahankara, etc. You get the idea? So cause and effect. So there's one cause, the mula prakriti, its effect is intellect. But now this intellect becomes a cause for ahankara. It's an effect from mula prakriti. Do you get that sense? Intellect is an effect which happened from mula prakriti, but itself becomes a cause to create something more, which is the ahankara. Ahankara is an effect from intellect, but it becomes the cause for creating the sense organs and the sense perceptions. Get the idea? All right. Now, ultimately, we end up in these states which are only the effect. They cannot produce any more effect. Alright? So they don't become the cause of anything. That part which cannot create any further effect, it's called Vishesha. Okay? It has nothing to do with the common meaning of the Sanskrit word in English. Patanjali has used these in a very specific manner. And you have to only understand these words in that context. So no translation in English can justify its meaning or understanding. Absolutely none. Okay? If you know, it says specific, means nothing. You know, that word doesn't give you any idea what that means. The idea is that visheshas are those elements which have no further effect, which cannot be the cause of anything. Okay? Then avishesha are those which can have both which were an effect from some other cause, but also can have other effects. They are in the middle. All right, that's avishesha.
Can you give us an example of vishesha? Something that has no further effects?
Like, for example, in the common example that I gave, okay, from milk, you make yogurt, okay? Now, yogurt is both, is an avishesha because it has, it can become the cause, as well, it's an effect from the milk, and it can become the cause for butter also, right? If you churn yogurt, it becomes butter. You get the idea? Okay, so butter in that sense is vishesha for that particular purpose. Now, when you melt the butter, it becomes ghee. Alright? So then ghee at that level becomes your vishesha. It has no further evolute that can come from it. But ghee was caused by butter. So butter is in the middle. That's a vishesha. Similarly, butter came from yogurt. So yogurt is also avishesha because it has a cause and it has an effect. In this context, in this sequence, milk has no further cause. Because it has no further cause in that sense, in that sequence, it's called linga matra. Okay? Linga matra. All right? The reason I'm saying that linga matra is because it came from somewhere, right? It's not that it came from the milk. So, for example, yeah, okay. Let's put it this way: milk also is an avishesha because it came from the cow. Let's put it this way. I'm just extending the argument here. But if we say cow is the ultimate source of all this, then this milk becomes linga matra. It has an indicator, it has a source, okay? But that's it. Beyond that, nothing else. And alinga means which has nothing beyond, there's no cause for it at all. You get the idea now? Somewhat? Alright? So when we looked at this picture, all right, prakriti is only a cause. It has no, it is not an effect of anything. That's the whole point. The Sankhya philosophy says prakriti is not an effect of anything. It's there. It's a real entity. It's an independent entity. It's there by itself, prakriti. It has no further cause. It's not caused by anything. It's there. Therefore, that's called alinga. Okay? No further cause. Okay? Then buddhi, which is the intellect, it's called linga matra, which means it has a cause, but that's it. That's the last cause. Okay? Final cause. All right? So that's how we want to understand these terms. Vishesha, avishesha, linga matra, and then alinga. Like I said, no English translation can make you understand what these are. Absolutely none.
So, Bhaiji, I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Why, maybe I missed it, but why in the previous chart there is a pointer from Purusha to Prakriti? The dotted one?
No, that's dotted. The dotted in the sense that it's a proximity.
In
it's
parallel. Okay.
It's proximity, not parallel. It's proximity.
Proximity.
Okay. They're saying that they too have to, you know, to have to have that proximity with each other. Then only this whole creation can happen.
Okay. And also in this chart, we have only one alinga and one linga. Example, right?
No. One alinga,
mm-hmm.
That is prakriti,
right?
And then buddhi is linga matra.
Yes, but there's only one example of.
Yes, linga. Yes, linga matra is one. The others are vishesha and avisheshas, basically.
I have a question too.
Yeah.
I guess I'm thinking about the days in school where you learned about evolution and science,
uh-huh.
And generally there, if you look at it that way, you would see more the bottom of the chart and evolving up, like you've had to have all the elements on Earth to create the right conditions for life to evolve. And then once it evolved to man, you become conscious and all this stuff. Uh-huh. So I guess you just have to think about in a different mindset of like science of evolution.
Yeah. This is all Sankhya philosophy. This is, the way they teach it in school is slightly different, obviously, yeah.
Upside down evolution.
In some sense, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Bas, can you go to your next slide? I have a question.
This one?
Yeah, I just got a little bit confused. You said Prakriti was Alinga. But then...
No. Prakriti is Alinga, yeah. Uh-huh.
Then why does it say Linga Matra?
Linga Matra is Buddhi, intellect.
Okay. A pointer to the unmanifest Prakriti.
Yes.
As its cause.
Yes.
But not itself. Okay.
No. It's Linga Matra is Buddhi.
Yeah, okay.
That has a cause, but no further cause.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does all that make sense now?
Yeah, sort of.
I know, it's sort of, because these are, you know, listen to me. These are concepts which are known to be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Even some of these so-called experts, either they don't understand it or they cannot explain it very well. Or if they explain it well, I don't understand them very well. Okay? So, it's a way to... You just keep going, exploring these concepts. Eventually, maybe someday you'll grasp it. Okay? So, like everyone else, I'm struggling, you know. I don't claim to understand them thoroughly. But
I read somewhere somebody said, I can explain it to you, but I can't understand it for you. And that just opened me up, so it made me laugh, yeah. I went, okay, well, let's do it again then.
Yeah, but that's where I am. You know, people have tried to explain it to me, but they have not made me understand all this. So I read all these commentators who think they are explaining it well, but I'm telling you, honestly, when you read these commentators, you know that they are also confused. Okay? And they actually, some of them actually mentioned that. You know, like in Bryant's case, you know, he admits to it. He doesn't understand it thoroughly. It's okay. All right? So these people, everyone is confused because these sutras are so cryptic, so brief in their size, there's no way to understand what Patanjali has in his mind, you know, when he wrote that. So we just try to put things together, basically. Okay, so far so good. If that works, then we'll go into the... Just the listing of these 16, like we said, there are 16 of these visheshas. Remember vishesha was? What is vishesha? Anybody want to repeat that?
No more further effect.
No more further effect. Very true. So visheshas are the final effects and they are not the cause of anything else. Okay? What are these? These are the five gross elements, earth, water, fire, air and ether. Five sense organs, ears, skin, eyes, nose, and the tongue. Five organs of action, hands, legs, speech, excretion, procreation. And finally, the mind. Okay? That's why I said that in that chart, it's a misrepresentation. This mind is not the creator of these. It's a misrepresentation here. You have to change that chart somehow. Not sure why it happened that way. This is taken from the book by Usharbud Arya. Okay? This is what it says here. I didn't take it. It's in his one of his books.
Subhashi, there is this rajas in between sattvic.
So rajas is the impelling factor. Rajas is what makes all that happen. So rajas, you need the rajas to have this evolution happen from ahankara to these 11 elements. And these 10 elements here. Rajas is required. They call it the impelling force. Without rajas, no movement can happen. Okay, so we listed these 16 visheshas, no further effects. Then there are 6 avisheshas, which means they have both effect and a cause for themselves. Remember, ahankara caused the 5 tanmatras and all that. It caused these things to happen. Remember this? Ahankara is the cause of all that's happening here. It's the cause for everything. And then, but it has, as a cause, it has some cause. What was the cause of ahankara? What caused ahankara?
Prakriti.
Ahankara. What was caused by?
Buddhi.
Buddhi, yes. You keep getting back to that, okay? Ahankara was caused by buddhi, all right. And these 5 tanmatras, they were caused by what? Who created 5 tanmatras?
Senses, no?
Yep. Who caused it? What was the causing factor?
Elements.
Yeah, no. Tanmatras.
Ahankara?
Yes, ahankara. So tanmatras were called by the ahankara. You have to keep that chart in handy. It gets very confusing otherwise. But the point is that these are the 6 avishesha. Avishesha means they have both a cause and an effect. Okay, the cause for ahankara was the intellect. The effect for ahankara is these 5 tanmatras. And the 5 tanmatras have their cause, which is the ahankara, and an effect. Now, what is the effect of these 5 tanmatras? Anybody remember? Come on, guys, we just went over that chart. What are the effects of 5 tanmatras?
Nothing.
What do you mean? They are avisheshas. They have to have an effect.
Senses. Sensing.
Come on, guys, look back at the chart. You cannot, okay.
Gross elements.
Yes, there you go. This needs a lot of, you know, contemplation, kind of reviewing, going back and forth. This chart is the entire crux of Sankhya philosophy. The whole Sankhya philosophy is built around this chart, basically. Okay?
Subhash, do you mind sharing this chart?
What's that?
Do you mind sharing this chart?
Oh, these slides are in your your possession already.
Oh, they are?
Okay. Yeah. You should, you know, everyone should have them. They are on my website, they are in my emails, everywhere. You know, these slides are not hidden.
Subhash, what did you say is wrong with the chart? The mind does not point to the cognitive senses?
Mind should be as an evolute, not as a cause for these 10 elements. It should be separately listed under one of the elements of these 11, okay? So 5 active instruments, 5 cognitive senses, and there should be another on the side here. So instead of the mind having two branches, the ahankara should have 3 branches, mind, 5
and
cognitive
senses. Okay.
All right?
Okay.
I'm not sure why that happened, you know. But when you read the text, the Sankhya, that's how it's given in the Sankhya text. It's not like this.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. So now, I have been mentioning this word Sankhya. Does everyone know what Sankhya is?
Need to go back and learn. I jumped in middle, so...
What's Sankhya? Anybody? What is Sankhya?
It's one of the 6 philosophy traditions.
Right. One of the 6 philosophical traditions. And the one that Patanjali has used as its basis for formulating the Yoga Sutras. So Patanjali has used Sankhya as a kind of a founding stone, you can call it, you know. So all the element, all the basic tenets, all the basic principles of Sankhya have been taken up by Patanjali in developing his own philosophy of the Yoga Sutras. Okay? Right. And this concept of Purusha and Prakriti, it comes from Sankhya that Patanjali has used in every in all these concepts that he has presented. Purusha is the soul or the Atma, Prakriti is the material counterpart. All right, so you have to keep that in mind. Okay. Okay. So what we said was. So 16 visheshas, 6 avisheshas, and then finally buddhi, which is also an avishesha. No, buddhi is the linga matra, sorry, not avishesha, because it's only pointing to the unmanifest prakriti, and beyond that there is nothing. Okay, so linga matra. Linga is a pointer. Linga means a pointer, an indicator. That's the word linga. Matra is only. A pointer only. But it has an absolute, it has an effect, okay, which is the ahankara, ego. And then unmanifest prakriti is a linga. A means no, no linga, no pointer to nothing. That means it has no cause. Uncaused, as they call it. Prakriti is uncaused. Alright? So, this is all Sankhya philosophy. Right? And I'm, you know, mentioning this because Tanuja is studying Gita. Gita is predominantly based on the Vedanta philosophy, which is very different from this. So don't get confused, all right? And especially when you go back to Swami Dayananda, you know, he is such a strong Vedanti follower that he will say, you know, this is all garbage. Okay. There are differences, you know, between Vedanta and this philosophy. We are studying Yoga Sutra, so we stick with this. Don't get confused with Vedanta. All right. So now, I just took this from this commentary by Thaimni. He's one of the commentators. And what he says is that these four stages of gunas mentioned in this sutra, they correspond to the four stages of samadhi. Okay, so I don't know, those of you who are new, they don't know this, the whole context of this statement here. So in the chapter 1, you know, they talked about the four stages of samadhi. Does anybody remember that? Four stages of samadhi? Alright.
Wasn't here on the first hour. Are you talking about like the difference in
Nidivikalpa
Samadhi, for example, as opposed to
Mahasamadhi? No,
or
no,
is
no,
a
no.
Whole different concept.
No, no, no. Patanjali's concept of Samadhi.
Yeah,
with Karka, Vichara, Ananda, Smita. Right. Four.
Dharana, Dhyana.
No, that's the 8 limbs of yoga you're talking about.
Okay.
Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi are the final 3 limbs of yoga. But what Patanjali has described in chapter 1 are the different stages of samadhi. Okay? Different stages of samadhi. Okay? So at the... not sure if it makes sense to go back there now. You know. Let me spend 1 minute. Is that okay? Okay, so at the very high level, what he says, there are two stages of samadhi. Okay, one he calls sampragnyata samadhi, and the other he calls asampragnyata samadhi. All right, what does that mean? At a very high level, the sampragnyata samadhi involves a seed, something like a mantra. If I give you an example, a mantra can be a seed. So when you chant mantra in your mind, and then you attain the final state of samadhi, okay, that becomes the samadhi with seed, because that bija, that seed is going to still there basically, and it can bring fruits once you come out of samadhi, etc. So that's the state of samadhi called sampragnyata. And the other word he uses is sabija. Sabija means with seed. So that samadhi, which has a seed in it, an example is a mantra. I'm just giving you an example which is most commonly known. That samadhi is called with seed or sabija. Then the state that is beyond that, where you have completely lost track of that mantra also, that seed also. There's nothing in the mind. It's vacuum basically. That he calls nirbija samadhi, seedless. So with seed samadhi and seedless samadhi. All right. Those are the two very broad divisions of samadhi that Patanjali talks about. But then he divides the samadhi with seed into six categories. And these are the four broad categories: vitarka, vichara, ananda, and asmita. And in the later part of the chapter 1, he divides vitarka into two different subdivisions. He calls them savitarka and nirvitarka. That means with vitarka and without vitarka, or absence of vitarka. And then same thing with vichara, savichara and nirvichara, which is with vichara and absence of vichara. Again, these words in Sanskrit cannot be translated into English. Please understand that very carefully. There's no way to translate them into English. You can only understand them. Okay? You cannot translate them. Vitarka means keeping the thought process at a gross level. Vichara means keeping the thought process at a subtle level. When you go beyond that, you can reach the state of ananda, which is pure bliss. Okay, blissful state. That's the state of samadhi. And when you go past that, when you transcend even the ananda state, then you go into the state of asmita, which is pure being, essence of pure being. At that point, the full sentence is I am, period. Okay? At this stage, at the ananda stage, the statement is, I am blissful. Okay, there's still an attribute to that I am. I am blissful. That's ananda state. Okay? At the vichara state, a lot of things. I am enjoying this taste. I love this. I hate this. That's vichara. Vitarka is the same thing at the gross level. When you go past these things, ananda stays, I am blissful. Attribute to I am. At the asmita state, that blissful goes away. I am, period. End of it. That's it. Nothing beyond that. What does that mean? You have now attained a state of pure being, pure essence, with no attributes, no adjectives, no definitions. Pure being. That's asmita. So what Taimni in his commentary says, that you can align vishesha with vitarka, avishesha with vichara, linga with ananda, alinga with asmita. That's just one way of looking at these things. Nobody else kind of agrees with that, but I just wanted to bring it out because, like I said, every commentator has their own minds, you know, has their own interpretation. Okay? And then he also aligns them with the koshas. Remember the five koshas? Anybody remember the five koshas? No? What are the five koshas?
I just
Manomaya kosha. They're here. Vijnanamaya kosha, Anandamaya kosha.
Anandamaya kosha.
Those are three. There are five, I said. The three are listed here. What are the other two? Caught you. Five koshas.
Annamaya kosha, pranamaya kosha.
There you go.
Ignanamaya kosha, anandamaya kosha.
Beautiful. There you go. Okay.
Annamaya,
pranamaya. Anyway, all right. I didn't want to get into that. But anyway, this is the kind of the correlation that Taimni has made between these four stages of the four gunas, the vishesha, avishesha, linga, and alinga, and then between the koshas. That's just his interpretation. All right? And we can go into depth. There's a whole lot of discussion that will go into how these are related and how these are not related and all that. I'm not sure if you want to get into that. All right. Let's leave it at the Sankhya level, which says, you know, cause and effect, cause and effect, cause and effect. Let's stay at that level for now. Okay? Otherwise, it gets very confusing. Okay. All right. So, this is the whole concept of Sankhya philosophy, the whole concept of creation, evolution. All right. Everyone okay so far? Have I confused you enough?
It wasn't a session.
What's that?
But I'm saying today's session is very intense but awesome.
Intense. Yes, it is very intense. It's heavy. It's heavy stuff. Absolutely. I don't deny that.